I looked at why Americans got into the habit of calling their nation the city on a hill, and became fascinated by this when I was working on a larger project on America's messianic identity, or what's sometimes called the Redeemer myth. Right. And that's a phrase that's been around since the 1960s. An important book called Redeemer Nation started that train of thought. So I wanted to figure out how America, as I said, ever got into the habit of calling itself the city on a hill. We hear it all the time in politics today, made very popular by Ronald Reagan, not original with him, although we might assume so, since we so closely identify it with him from the late 1960s through his farewell address from the White House in 1989. And since that time, Republican candidates have used it to do some pretty heavy lifting for domestic and foreign policy agendas. So I wanted to figure out, well, it's not natural that this would have happened. It's a phrase that comes out of the New Testament. Mm. It's a phrase that comes out of the Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus tells his disciples that you will be a city set upon a hill. So how in the world did a phrase from first century Palestine make its way all the way down to 20th and 21st century America? That to me should be a central question about how we define ourselves as a people.
And I know there's a lot of research that goes into this and a book's worth of material that comes out of it. But if you can begin to talk a little bit about that progression of where you see this word beginning to spread and infuse itself into our culture, where do you begin?
The phrase itself, city on a hill, enters into American consciousness directly, I would say, in 1630. And as soon as I say that, I already have to backtrack and start adding complexity and nuance to that. Let me say that most people assume today, along with Ronald Reagan, that the city on a hill identity begins in 1630 with the Puritan governor, John Winthrop, with his shipboard address, the model of Christian charity. And we assume that the phrase comes from that speech and then follows an unbroken chain, an unbroken trajectory all the way down to the current campaign. That's not the case. And if that were the case, I don't think it would be a very interesting story or worth the kind of historical archaeology I had to do to put all this back together. But indeed, the Puritan leader John Winthrop, near the end of his address, the model of Christian charity, he grabbed hold of this phrase from the New Testament, from the Sermon on the Mount. He grabbed hold of the phrase that and said, told his Puritan community, "We shall be as a city upon a hill. The eyes of the world will be upon us." And the unexpected part of the story, the quirky part of the story, is that from that point on, the city on a hill phrase nearly disappears. It was a commonplace in the 1600s. Other Puritan leaders used it in other contexts. So it wasn't that strange for him to say this. It even had a history back in 16th and 17th century England. Very pious communities would be called a city on a hill, an exemplary, a model city on a hill. But in the American context, it actually vanished because the model of Christian charity remained unpublished for 208 years. Hmm. It was among the family papers of the Winthrop family. I imagine it sitting in an attic somewhere. It was not donated to an archives until the early 19th century. It was donated not to the Massachusetts Historical Society, but actually to the New York Historical Society, where it remains in its earliest copy to this day. And since it wasn't published until 1838, there was no way for a historian to quote the document, no way for a historian or a politician to quote the phrase and attribute it to John Winthrop. It's a period of silence, a two-century-long gap in the story. But then, once it enters in print, becomes available in print, very slowly is it then picked up by historians. Surprisingly slowly. It takes about 20 years before some prominent New England historians begin quoting the document. One of the things that I found intriguing about that, once it is available, historians didn't really draw attention to the phrase city on a hill. It's a long address. It's a long speech. It would take perhaps more than 20 minutes to deliver, if anyone ever delivered. And we're not sure. We have no record of John Winthrop actually delivering the speech. But that's how it's often described, delivered on board the Arbella. We don't know that.
Hmm.
But it would take 20-some minutes. And it's only near the very end that the phrase "City on a Hill" appears, this exhortation to his community, as what he calls a community of peril entering the new world. So, but when historians begin quoting the document, I think it's only natural that they would quote larger sections of it. They would try to understand what Winthrop meant by the document as a whole. And indeed, it is an exhortation to practice love, to practice charity in the old-fashioned word, to practice mercy within a community knit together, as he would say, in the bonds of affection. That's what it is, page after page. So historians quote these larger sections. And the prominent New England historian, George Bancroft, probably the most widely read historian in 19th century America, he started quoting these more famous, but became famous phrases by the late 1850s in revised editions of his earliest volumes of his multi-volume History of the United States. Another little quirk here, he used the phrase "City on a Hill," but he never attributed it to John Winthrop, and he didn't attribute it to the model of Christian charity. He just threw it out there as a phrase to capture the identity of the Puritan community. Well, this takes a long, long time, and it's really not until the 20th century that historians distill this entire speech down to the single phrase, "City on a Hill," and use that as what I call the rhetorical crescendo of the address, and even more than that, use it as this single tagline that is supposed to summarize the speech, summarize the Puritan mission in the New World, and eventually summarize what America means. We are supposed to be this model, exemplary nation to the rest of the world, embodying certain values. And, of course, it becomes more secularized and politicized over time.
Do you think that spirit that you're talking about, that America is supposed to exemplify, would that have existed anyway? Or did this speech kind of reinforce this idea of what America is?
The idea of America as a city on a hill, the idea of America as a beacon of light, that impulse, that self-image or that self-understanding certainly comes from many different places. And anyone familiar with the 17th and the 18th century knows that American preachers, politicians, literary folk called America an exemplary place, a model place. Or probably the most prominent phrase is America as a new Israel, an American Zion, an American New Jerusalem. So I would never argue that because the phrase "city on a hill" might have been absent for half of our history, that therefore that idea has left no trace or no mark on America. That idea is there, but not the tagline that has become the most famous tagline for it in the last couple of decades.
What's become of this idea now, where it seems that America in the current day is one where all these ideas are being attacked about us, and we're seeing ourselves in a new positioning with new great world powers arising around us? And how do these ideas play out in modern America, do you think?
The idea of America as a city on a hill and the larger question of America as an exceptional nation has become a politically charged question, to say the least, especially over the last 4 years. Republican strategists and pundits have used it as a way to criticize President Obama, starting very early in his presidency when he was famously asked at the NATO summit in Strasbourg if he believed in American exceptionalism. He famously or notoriously said, "Well, I believe in American exceptionalism the way I suspect the Greeks believe in Greek exceptionalism, the Brits believe in British exceptionalism." That was a very nuanced, some said a postmodern, very self-conscious way of describing American exceptionalism. And he took a great deal of criticism for that. And so the Republicans on their side have latched on to this exceptionalism and every other phrase associated with it, like City on a Hill, and have used it as a way simultaneously to combat the Democratic agenda and advance their own. Mm. What gets lost in that is that the idea of exceptionalism has a long history within the Democratic Party and Democratic rhetoric. The very phrase City on a Hill has deeper roots in the Democratic Party than it does in the Republican Party. Mm. It was first used in its modern political setting in 1961 by John F. Kennedy in his farewell to the Massachusetts General Court, the Massachusetts legislature, in January of 61, just a few days before his inaugural. It was used by Lyndon Johnson. It was used by Robert Kennedy not long before his death. It has been used by Robert Kennedy's grandson. It has been used by Robert Kennedy's daughter, Kathleen Kennedy Townsend. It has a heritage, a lineage within the Democratic Party. But what I sense, I think a safe way to generalize this is to say that for the Democratic Party, City on a Hill speaks more to a domestic agenda, speaks more to the building of the welfare state and that achievement of the great society. For the Republican Party, it's primarily a matter of foreign policy.
And that was exactly my next question. It seems that does this saying and all it's come to embody allow America to, you know, enforce its will on other countries and foreign policy and to try and free, we often say, other countries to impose our values on them?
Part of the internal debate within the Republican Party, I think, is whether this phrase, if we use it at all, if we decide to use it at all, whether the phrase City on a Hill means that America is exemplary, self-restrained, a model for others, and that's an idea with a long lineage, or whether to be a city on a hill means in some way to be an outpost, an advanced guard, a part of a task force to spread American ideals through force of arms. And there are certainly those within the Republican Party. There are editors at National Review and elsewhere who use the city on a hill imagery to justify a very aggressive stance in the world for the United States, more of a global democracy agenda, whereas other Republicans might use it as a more restrained, even carrying an isolationist tone, that we are removed, we're on a hill, we're shining, and therefore it is a more modest agenda of simply taking care of our own house and keeping it in order, and perhaps others will imitate it.
Well, you know the text so well and where these ideas come from. How do you see the interpretation? Is there one that is really more fitting to the exact words or the spirit of the original documents?
Figuring out the original intention and spirit of those words as they are embedded in the larger model of Christian charity was one of the most difficult tasks I undertook, and that called upon all of my resources as a historian. And I had to live up to my own good advice that I give to my students and make sure I exercised the kind of historical awareness and consciousness that was necessary to figure out how those words did function in the original document. And it should not surprise us, I think, that the phrase, no matter how famous it has become, the phrase had a fairly limited meaning in 1630. It's clear that Governor John Winthrop, if we use our imaginations here and realize where they were, that they're on a ship heading into the American wilderness, as it was known, facing difficult weather in New England, facing having to get a living out of the ground by planting crops, facing the military challenge of the Native American tribes in the area. It's a very dangerous situation into which they're going. And indeed, that phrase that Winthrop uses, a community of peril, I think drives what he's doing there. He is saying that we have to care for one another. Rich have to care for poor. We have to lend to those in need. We have to forgive the debts of those to whom we have loaned. All of these ideas infuse his speech. So when he says a city on a hill, he has in mind his community not only being in some form a new Israel in a new world, but almost a new primitive church out of the book of Acts. We need to have all things in common. We need to care for one another. And he is explicitly, of course, writing in as a Christian, he's writing about caring for one another in the body of Christ. I think what's interesting is to watch that transformed from a advice, an admonition, an exhortation given to a community of Christians, how that's transformed into a general political, economic, social vision, how it is secularized over time. So a Democratic politician like Mario Cuomo or Dukakis might read from the model of Christian charity, but they are using it to bolster communitarian values, the community of the modern American social welfare state, the safety net. Republicans are using it in just as secularized, politicized a way to talk about foreign policy. So it in my own judgment, I think it is impossible to use John Winthrop, to use the model of Christian charity, to use the phrase city on a hill in any way today about a nation of over 300 million people, to use it in any way that John Winthrop would have found recognizable. It would have boggled his mind to think about what we today try to force into his speech, what we try to force into that phrase that he picked up from the New Testament.
Wow. Dr. Gamble, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. It's been a privilege.